Yo, yo, what's going on, big dogs? Welcome into another episode of Adams Plus One, episode 94. We're bringing Nico Reza on. Nico is the founder and owner of Nico's Landscaping. He has a big hand in real estate, and he just finished his first Ironman this past summer. We're gonna ask him about his outlook on the housing market in 2025, any deals that he's recently come across, and then we're gonna have him reflect on his first Ironman. All really fun stuff, all really great stuff. Let's dive in. Thank you for coming on. I really want to talk about your outlook on real estate in 2025
Okay.
and like the near future. Is it a seller's market right now, buyer's market? What are you feeling? We can talk about the Northern Illinois area. I'm sure you're probably really dialed in there, but you can take
Yeah.
it and you can run with it any way you want, right? How do
Okay.
you feel?
Yeah, so the real estate market, especially in Northern Illinois, Rockford, I mean, I think everybody knows that Rockford is affordable compared to the rest of the world, right? Still around 150 to 170,000 median home price average and close to the average. I don't know. I just think it's starting to get unrealistic though. Even with those numbers, I feel like what people are seeing on Zillow for those prices are dilapidated houses, you know, so like more starter homes, you know, couples and maybe a kid or two, like you're probably spending around 200, 250 now. And that's a lot. You know what I mean? That's a lot. You got to come up with a down payment, your mortgage payment, maybe, you know, 2,500 a month.
That's a
So
lot.
and I think, yeah, exactly. And I think people are, I really just feel like we're switching to, it's going to be more of a rental market. There's studies coming out that have actually shown that renting is smarter than buying. And I don't know if it's true or not. I've never, it depends on your scenario, right? Because if you look as being a homeowner, you have to pay for if a furnace goes out, and it will at some point, and all your other stuff, your water heater, your roof is not 10,000 anymore. It's 15 or 20,000 now. So when you look at it like that, you know, if you're going to keep your house for 50, 60 years, okay, I'm sure you're going to be selling it and making a good profit, and maybe it's still worth it. But I don't know. Some studies are showing that just by renting, well, one, you keep that flexibility. You don't have that, hey, there's a roof. The roof is leaking. I need to come up with $15,000, $20,000 now. And it's shown it's even more affordable to rent. Now, rent prices are expensive, right? You know, nice house, 1,800, 2 grand a month, maybe even more. I'm not totally familiar with that type of stuff, but yeah, from what I've seen, I've seen a lot of people, especially our age, switching to rentals. It's expensive to buy a house, let alone hard to find a house.
Okay.
So,
So
yeah,
when
that's
you're
my
out
kind of
there,
my general overview.
yeah. So when you're out there looking for deals like this one that you just came out, you just found, what do you mind talking about, like what price range you were looking at for this deal? I know you have multiple houses in your portfolio, but like the house that you were just looking at, what range were you in for this deal?
Yeah, so for when I'm trying to buy a house, you want to buy under market value. And you want to buy anywhere from 70 to 80% of market value. So if a house is, you think, fixed up, can sell for 200, you know, if you're at a 75%, you got to buy that place for at least 150K. But wait, there's also repairs needed. And this is just a general rule of thumb being around that 75%. So if you're going to be at 150K offer, but you need 20,000 in repairs, you got to offer 130,000. And that's like just a kind of a general rule of thumb. So this one in particular was actually pretty close to that scenario. It's probably worth about 220. The seller kind of wants around 150, 160. And the problem is it needs quite a bit of repair. So I don't know if this deal will come into fruition or not, but I'm just trying to look at every deal possible right now.
And then Nico, you go in, you and your dad on this deal. Let's say it goes through. You guys will fix up this place, the two of you.
Yeah. Essentially, not us. We'll not like we won't personally fix it up. So you have to account for that into your repair costs as well. You know, you're hiring labor, which is more expensive than doing it yourself. So, yeah, we'll hire people basically, and we have people that we've trusted over the years, and they would come in and do the work.
Gotcha. Yeah, I figured you have like a group since I mean, you have multiple places now, right? So it's not like your first time doing this process where you need immediate repairs before you could rent it out.
Yeah, exactly. I'm an ex not an expert by any means in the repair category, and it's the contractor world is like any other world. It's hard to find people who are, I don't know, a good way to say
Reliable?
this, but yeah, I guess you could say like that. But it's hard to find people, regardless, whatever way you look at it.
I'm surprised, by the way, because you own a landscaping business. I'm surprised you're not a handyman. So are you a handyman? Okay, let's break it down for us, Nico. Scale of 1 to 10. If one, actually 0 to 10. If 0 is like Adam and to fix a bike tire, you take it to some locally owned business in Belvedere. That's me here. I'm a 0. But 10 is like you could build a house from scratch. Where are you at? Where's Nico at?
Would say maybe in my eyes, I'm probably a 4 to 5 because most of my friends are pretty handy. They know, but I would say I'm probably like a 6, maybe on the actual real scale. I would say maybe a 5 or 6. I'm handy enough where, I've got some tools and I can do some basic things, but nowhere the level of some of my friends who could, build an entire house or redo an entire house.
Definitely. So you would say, I know my question really going back to it was buyer's market or seller's market. It sounds like obviously we all know prices have been rising over the years. It sounds like it's more of a seller's market then. Would I be wrong to think that if it's more expensive? However, it's harder to sell at that price because people just aren't willing to pay for that right now. So people are moving toward renting. Is that what's going on? Is that what you're seeing?
It's when people say the term like buyer's or seller's market, to me, I look at it like, you think you're the buyer, you're in a great position. If the house is listed for 250, you're getting it for 220, 230. I don't really see, I haven't really seen deals like that. And I'm not a realtor, so I'm not for certain, but I'm thinking most deals are maybe close to asking price, 5,000 under asking price, maybe as much as 10,000. But I don't know, I just feel like saying it's a buyer's market. I don't know. It's still even expensive, even in Rockford. Like yes, it's an affordable market across the country, but still things are, it's just the cost, the cost of everything has gone up. So I would still probably say the sellers have an upper hand. But it's not as bad as it was. I wouldn't say it's a buyer's market, no. And everybody's different. I don't know. Other people think that it is now, but I don't know. There's people aren't building houses. Like there's not, tons and tons of houses out there.
Right.
Still very low inventory.
Two questions. One, your radius in terms of how all of the real estate that you have, is it only in the Belvedere Rockford area? Do you have any one-offs that are a little bit further away? What's the radius that you guys cover?
No, I only have places in Rockford, actually.
Okay.
I don't have anything in Belvedere, but I'm hoping to here in the near future. It's just a little bit more of an expensive market and a more desirable market, so it's harder to find places. But nah, they're kind of all in Rockford and like a central. They're within probably about 20 minutes of each other. I just personally have, and I've looked at houses in Freeport because Freeport is a similar market to Rockford. I don't know. I just haven't made that jump, or do I even want to invest in other places? Because right now we're very hands-on, right? There's some guys who own 3,000 units, 4,000, 5,000 units, and obviously they have a team in place, property managers, things like that. But right now we're just pretty hands-on, manage them ourselves. So I just try to keep them pretty close. I mean, I work, to drive to my shop is 5 minutes, literally 5 minutes. So it's like when I have to drive 40 minutes, 35 minutes, I'm like, man, this takes forever.
I know, man. I feel that. I feel that. Okay. When you're looking at a house and you're evaluating it, right? You're doing your valuation, and let's just the hypothetical you gave was perfect, right? This recent deal, you're like, I think it's like two worth 200, 220, but maybe where you're gonna offer the seller's looking for 150. How do you, without looking at Zillow, I know Zillow's gonna give you a number, but how does Nico, your dad, how do you guys what do you use to evaluate that house? What are you looking at in general?
Actually, it's probably simpler than people think. I actually kind of do use Zillow, right? Because I look at how many beds is there, How many bathrooms are there? And what's the square footage of the house? And then I go up on Zillow or another software we use called PropStream, which is a paid version, but I just use Zillow. And you look up the recently sold in the area, and you could see what's a 3-bed, 1-bath, and around that 2,000 square feet, what is that sold for in the most recent amount of time? And okay, look at it. Oh, it sold for, 250, but it had all new windows, all new roof, everything. So my place, I don't think we would do all that. So Mar might be worth somewhere around 230, 240. It's kind of a feel game, and that's hard to say with dealing with money, but it kind of is like, everything goes into it. How did you have a garage? How nice is the landscaping? The condition of the driveway, and then obviously all the interior stuff. How, are you putting in Moen versus a more cheaper option, or what type of finishes are you doing? Things of that sort. So I just kind of look through Zillow and just try to go through the comps, maybe even see what's for sale on the market right now. Right. I think that's important to look at as well, because you might find a house again that's similar. And what's that person selling it for? Just because Rockford, you usually have some good comps, but in Belvedere, there's not as much volatility in transactions as there is in Rockford. So sometimes you got to look at for sold or what is selling currently as well.
Right. Yeah, I feel like the other metric, I'm sure you probably look at it, maybe you don't, is maybe you do, is like, okay, you're looking at this house, the area, like you mentioned, what's selling now. But like the house itself, like you can on Zillow and these places that you're talking about, you can see, let's just say it's a 60-year-old house, right? Like what did this person pay for it when they got it, right? Like 20 years ago. Like how much has it gone up in value, right?
Yeah.
What's the area look like? Then you can kind of forecast a little bit, like, okay. They bought it for 100, they're selling it for 200, and they've had it for 20 years. Well, if I hold on to it for 20 years, like with houses in the area going up, what can I expect someday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
That's
exactly.
what
That's
you can look
a great way to look at it. And the other tool that I've been trying to use, I just don't know how accurate it is actually artificial intelligence, ChatGPT or Gemini. I type in the address, type in the condition of the house a little bit, the beds, the baths, what's actually ChatGPT usually can just pull, and ask them to run me a comparative market analysis, a CMA. And I've asked realtors what they thought, and some of them think that's pretty close. So I haven't actually had like an appraisal done recently where I could compare it, but I think it's honestly pretty close.
Okay, sweet. AI, I
Yeah.
love it. I use
Yeah.
ChatGPT. I get made fun of in the group chat how much I use ChatGPT. Everyone's like, Adam doesn't even need friends anymore because he talks to his ChatGPT all the time.
Yeah.
I just love it. So, okay, cool.
I'm with you.
Well, now I think, I don't know if you have anything else on real estate. I really wanted you to come on here and talk about it because I know you're super passionate about it. I know you're
Yeah.
crushing it. And I think just some of this basic things you're talking about, whether someone's buying a home for the first time, or they want to get into it. It's always good when you see like kind of just it's like anything, like how easy it is. I know it's not easy, but it's a lot easier than people make it out to be, right? It seems more
Yeah.
daunting. I'm sure it seemed daunting to you. I know the last time you were on the podcast, you talked about how you and your dad got your first deal, and now it's just a process that you go through. So not sure if you have anything else, but I really want to talk about the Iron Man too. So
Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk on the Iron Man as far as leaving with real estate. Yeah, I just want to let, obviously what you're saying, it's not as hard and as difficult as people think. You got to do a little bit of your own research. Buying, if you're just looking at renting a house, or buying a house, it's not as complicated as you think. Find a right mortgage lender, someone who's makes you comfortable, willing to sit down, answer all your questions. I think the key is to find that right person, your mortgage lender and your realtor. And obviously, if you're looking to invest, I'd be happy to help anybody who would have any questions on that.
yeah, that's bad. That's badass, man. I love it. Okay, so speaking of badass, things that we love fitness. So I was gonna write down what the Iron Man is, but then I thought, why not just have Nico tell people who don't know? I know we've heard of the Iron Man, but what is the Iron Man? And take us back when you just when where were you at? What was going through your mind when you decided, I'm gonna do the Iron Man. I'm gonna start training for this. Go ahead.
So I'm actually only a half Iron Man.
Oh, you did
So
hype.
I
Oh,
guess.
it's my bad. My bad. I'm over here hyping this guy up. He did a half, okay? But that's
Most
okay.
people
Still.
say if you do the half, though, you just say, oh, I'm an Iron Man, even though you're technically not. But most people just think it's cool if you do it, you know, if we're getting technical. I just tell people I'm an Iron Man. So what it is a 1.2 mile swim. On average, that would take someone about 40 to 50 minutes to swim that, just for an average Joe, such as myself. And then you followed by a 56-mile bike ride. That's anywhere from 3 to 4 hours, I would say. And then you run a 13, 1 mile run, so a half marathon. And that probably is anywhere around, I don't know, maybe 2 hours or so. So it's definitely a long thing. It took me about, I think I was somewhere in the 6 hour mark. I feel like I was somewhere around 6 hours. I had no prior now experience anything ever doing a triathlon. I've never biked in my life. I've never swam competitively. I mean, I've swam in a lake. You know, but and I never have really run, but I don't know. It's just I knew it was coming to Rockford. I knew it was a big deal, and my buddy asked me if I wanted to do it, and I really have missed like a competition aspect since being out of high school and sports and things of that sort. And I'm like, all right, let's do it. So I trained for I think a little over a year, which in hindsight was probably too long because at the end. Getting close to the Ironman, I really started to get kind of worn out and like, man, I just want this thing to be here, you know, because it's a time consuming task, train a lot of training involved. But yeah, I mean, I would probably do every day, probably 6 days a week. I was either running, biking, or swimming, and then a lot of days, probably 2 to 3 days, I was doing two of them. So I would run and swim. Do like a brick workout.
So you were sitting around, someone said, "Hey, Ironman's coming," and you said, "I've never swam except for in a lake. I've never done a triathlon. I barely ever run, but I'm gonna do all three in one day." That's how
Yeah,
that
exactly. That's
went.
pretty much how it went. I was just in it for the challenge. I wasn't in it to beat anybody. I was just in it to do it myself, give myself that satisfaction of, hey, you can do it. You could put yourself through something, you know, difficult. And that was really cool, just because again, it was nice to like have that competition with myself of like pushing yourself to your limits and training for something. I was in the best shape of my life. I didn't know this was a thing, but after marathons, triathlons, things of that sort, people kind of get I wouldn't say depressed, but like there's a postpartum type of thing for races, and I wasn't like sad or anything, but I definitely was like, man, I'm not training as hard. I don't feel as good as I was just a few weeks ago, and I missed it. I'm shoot, you know, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna verbally commit to doing the next Ironman on the podcast right
Oh,
now.
dang, we got it right here. Are you doing? But wait. Now people want to know. Is it the half Iron Man again? Or are we doing the full Iron Man? Because we got to know when we
I'm gonna do
commit.
the half again.
All right.
I'm
Very
gonna do
good.
the half. The full, I don't know, you're a different type of breed doing the full, because a full would be it's just double everything that I said.
Very sad.
So there's no way I'm biking 112 miles and then running a full marathon. Like I don't know. I don't think I have the time to train for it or the commitment. It's just you're a different breed.
Honestly, now that you've laid out, because I thought it was a full Ironman, I really didn't know the extent of each event or like area. Dude, there's nothing half about that to me.
Yeah.
56 miles on the bike in a half marathon is not, right? That's no joke.
It's a long
So
time.
it's a long
Yeah.
time. And so cool. I'm happy that you're committing to it. Interesting that you're talking about feeling the way you're feeling, because I had Arielle on my podcast. She's a fitness nutrition coach with Coaching Tailored Method. And it was all about one of her clients said, "Hey, you just had a baby. Talk about postpartum. How are you dealing with it in your mindset?" And she said something very interesting about how athletes, when they retire, they get depressed.
Right.
Or you have the baby, or you have the Ironman, and that, or you're planning a wedding. And it's like, that date and everything's about that. Like every day when you were training for the Ironman, I know there it got to a point where you said, "Man, I wish this was over," but it was just always on your mind. Okay. And
Right.
it's over. And it's like, what do I do next? And that's where you're at, right? A little bit. So it's fascinating that I have had two podcasts in the last 2 days where that idea sort of comes up. So I guess I want to ask two questions. One, this is a different question, like, and then I'm going to go to the next one. So let's pull them apart. Which event is hardest for you to train for? And then the day of, which one was hardest? But then more specifically, what was the hardest moment of the entire thing, whether that was in training or the actual event itself? So, was it harder for you to bike, run, or swim? Right? Which one came less natural or you had to put more work in? And was there a specific moment during that event that you were like, oh man, this sucks? What did I get myself into?
So I looked at it like this. Okay, the swim is 30, 40, 50 minutes. That's not that long relative to the rest of the race. So I'm like, okay, as long as I can do the swim, I'm happy. I don't need to finish any type of thing. As long as I finish, I'm happy. So I would practice swimming and I'm a decent swimmer, so I had that checked off. Biking was definitely the hardest thing for me because it's so long and grueling and lonely and I'm not the biggest fan of biking. I mean, when you're riding on the road, right? So I typically don't like to listen to music because I like to listen to the cars. You go out there for 2, 3 hours and it's very boring by yourself. It's very lonely. Running is nice because you got the music in, like you're around the park, things of that sort. It's just a fun, little bit more of a fun environment because the road, just I don't know, on the road and it's just so bumpy. It's tough. Biking is really, really tough. So I knew, and that was my weakest thing. I knew that was my weakest leg. So during the race, I knew I had to give everything I could in the bike. And I had ridden the course before, 30 of the 56 miles. So I knew the course and I've ridden the other 20. So I knew the course like decently well, and it was tough. I knew it was going to be hard. And, I knew I had to give everything I could on the bike and just go as hard as I could and just literally drag myself through the run. So that's what I kind of did during racing. And, actually we had Man, we had brutal temperatures. It was like 100 degrees. I don't know what the index, 110, whatever. It was the heat was a major factor. Like it was almost the fourth leg of this Ironman. It was brutally hot. But luckily, being landscaping, I work outside a lot. I'm used to it more so than probably some other people who were racing. So I gave it everything I could on the bike. I mean, people were like passing out. They would be off on the side of the road, needing medical attention, things like that. So I would say it was scary, but it was just like, you got to know, you got to be prepared for this. So get off the bike, and I finished pretty well. My legs were doing pretty decent. I start running, and at first, my legs are absolute jello. Mile like 1 through 2, I was just like getting loose again. And then, probably mile, I would say it was like mile 6 or 7, I entered like what I call the pain cave, and it was brutal. Like I was just, I never walk when I run. I just try to run. Like if I'm going to run 5 miles, I want to run 5 miles. I never walk in between, and I had to stop a lot during the 13 miles of the run. And I was just in the pain cave. One thing, like it was brought up on the news, is through the run part of the course, a lot of residents were giving us water, spraying us down, things of that sort. And it was amazing. And it was amazing. So it was a two loops, 6.5 miles. And I was running on the first loop. I'm getting sprayed down. It was amazing. And this girl in front of me, she goes, "Oh, please don't get me wet. Please don't get me wet. Don't get my feet wet." And I was just like, what? I don't know what this lady's deal is. But
I think I
I
know
was
where
like,
this is
okay,
going.
like spray it on me, So I was on lap one, and I later found out she was on lap two. And when I got back to lap two, I really understood why she was saying that. My feet were soaked. I mean, I was walking with 2 10-pound bricks, And they were so raw at that point that I start my feet started to blister.
Oh
And
boy.
that was the thing that probably hurt the most was my feet just being so wet. Don't get me wrong, I love those people. The support was amazing. I would love if they'd, do it again, but it's just like it's just part of the race, basically. So
It's the first time through too. So when you do it next time, you'll know that. And then you'll be like, yo, no, don't spray me. So question, when you get done with the swim, how much time in real life goes by before you get on the bike? Is it right away? Like we're talking like you walk out of the lake, you dry off or wherever you swam, and then you jump on the bike. Are we talking within minutes? What's the time that goes past in that?
how it works is you hop out, and every Ironman's a little bit different considering where your transition area is. So you run to your transition area, and then you grab your dry off. You can grab a little snack, grab your bike, get your stuff ready, and transition time anywhere. I mean, the All-Stars are like a couple minutes, 1, 2 minutes. I was probably somewhere around maybe 5 to 7 minutes. The funny thing is, I'm an eater. I like to eat. And that's really not known. Like a lot of runners, people in these type of events, they eat gels and very minimal. Well, I don't. I have to eat, so I'm eating a whole sandwich. And it's really known that you get digestive problems and have to use the bathroom while you're running. But I don't know. I just have a stomach where I need to eat, so I'm literally eating a sandwich while I'm getting dressed. And then there's a picture of me eating a sandwich on the bike. Just because I don't know, I have to eat. I mean, I was eating like thick granola bars, and people are like, "You're crazy! You can't eat that! Like, you need to eat the gels." But I don't know, my stomach hurts from the gels. So yeah, it's like a few minutes, so you really don't have much of a break.
Gotcha. Now, you mentioned the pain cave. Where do you go in the pain cave mentally? What are you thinking in those moments? And how do you kind of get yourself every time to run more, right? Or push harder? Like where does Nico go in the pain cave?
To me, I look at it like this, it's going to be over, right? It's going to be over. It's just a matter of when. Like, think about tomorrow is not that far away. Tomorrow, I'll be sitting at home relaxing. You just got to get through this, and there'll be tomorrow. So I don't know. I just try to dig deep mentally, keep pushing, keep pushing, keep going, and eventually this is going to be over. And then obviously, like there's the fact of there's a huge reward. Like you're almost there. You're mile 5 of the running portion, like you've already completed 2 legs. I had a great support system. My family, my friends were there, and they would run to different locations to see me. So every time I would see them, it would give me like a boost. That was just amazing as well. It was just, dude, yeah, it was a crazy day.
That is a crazy day, dude. Well, that's good stuff. I find it interesting because yeah, you weren't a runner. Did you run in high school? Not cross country or anything, right? What sports did you play in high school? Yeah, obviously you did athletics.
So I played baseball and basketball, so I had a little bit of conditioning, but nowhere of that extent. And actually, I should tell you a funny story too, Adam. So
Yeah, please do. We're here for
I was
this.
like, okay, I've never done this before. I should probably do smaller triathlon. There's these mini triathlons hosted in the area. So I did one, which was about, I think it was maybe it was a 3-leg thing. So it was like a 400-meter swim, if I remember correctly. Took about 10 to 12 minutes, and then like a 20-mile bike and like a 3-mile run or something. So I was going into that a little bit nervous. Well, it was a really eye-opening experience because during the swim, I had a literal like panic attack. I was probably like 5 minutes into the swim and was like, oh my God, I can't do this. Like, I can't touch the ground. I don't know what to do. And I was like on my back. I was doing the backstroke, everything of that sort. The problem was never doing this. I'm like, man, I'm gonna go out there, I'm gonna give it balls to the walls, I'm gonna go out hard. My heart rate elevated way out of my normal training. It was probably like 160, 170. And my heart rate went kept going and kept going and kept going higher. And I just lost it. And I had to like take a minute in the water to compose myself and to finish the swim. So that was like a major eye-opening experience, let alone knowing that that's like a 10-minute swim versus I have to do about a 40 to 50-minute swim. So After that event, I practiced the swim several times.
it ended up being a really good like precursor to the real event because it opened your eyes. You perhaps it's interesting you say that. This is a little like sort of a step away, but on the same idea. David Goggins, his book's awesome. One of his very first books, I believe it's like Can't Hurt Me, but he talked about how when he does, because he does like those crazy races, right? And he's like, I'd get out there and run, and I'd notice like a guy or two would want to try to run with me, right? And he was like, you'd see them like fall off eventually because they didn't train with me. So the pace I'm running at, however that is, you got to run your race. And he talks about in life, you have to run your race. So you went out there just balls to the walls, but like there are people that when you go out, even on a 5K, right? They like, I'm gonna try to keep up with this person or that person, and it's like, man, you just gotta whatever. However you trained, like Nico trained for the swim, you gotta swim that day at that pace, right? And so different for you because it was just you went out balls to the wall, but it's a good reminder. Like, however you swim when you go out there, it doesn't matter what other people are doing. Which it sounds like for your experience at the half, the half Ironman, you didn't do that. You didn't go out there trying to beat other people. You went out there and did
No.
your thing.
And that's a good point because during the swim, everyone was going out. I went fast with everybody else. And that was probably my problem, is I was trying to go with everybody else. But no, I realized, listen, go your pace. It doesn't matter if you beat me by 5 minutes in the swim. I could catch up on the bike. And I don't even care if you beat me, right? Because you're battling yourself. Like when you're going for 6.5 hours, you're not going to be next to the same guy very long or same lady very long. I mean, maybe 30 seconds. So it's like, I'm just going to do my own thing. I'm battling myself. That's what you're battling, is yourself.
And you got to be able to beat yourself, which that's, I think, what you learned throughout the process is that, I mean, not that you didn't know it, but it gives you evidence, right? We talked about that yesterday on my podcast about how you need evidence. You now have evidence. So now here's my question, and this will be the last question, is if you're going to do it again, it sounds like you've committed to do it again. Will you change anything in your training? And this time, do you have any goal now in mind? Like, for example, I'm not telling you this is your goal, but I don't want to walk on the run. This time I want to finish the run without walking. Anything come to mind on any updates you do on your training based off of your last experience and any goals while you do it?
Yeah, I never had a coach or a training plan or anything. I just kind of did it myself, or ChatGPT did. I would say what I'm going to do instead of training so often, I'm going to try to train in longer spurts, and do more like race-like situations. Just because I was doing 20 miles a week on the bike 4 to 5 times. Well, if I can just carve out on a Saturday doing 50 miles, I just think it'd be e like that's just the I feel like in my head it's going to help myself from, oh, I got to ride the bike 5 times today versus, oh, I just got to do one big ride on Saturday. So that's kind of what I'm going to try to maybe gear myself towards. I
I
haven't
think
really made a
that's going
training
to
plan.
help your recovery, by the way, because if you do it Saturday, then you can recover from the bike for a while. You know what I mean? Not that you're not going to do anything the next few days, but recovery-wise, I think that'll be good for your recovery.
Totally. I'm gonna have a goal for the time. I don't know if I'm gonna do like a walking thing or anything of that sort, but I think I'm gonna do a goal for the time. I don't remember my time exactly. I don't, but I'm gonna probably have a goal for the time. I'm doing it just because of the putting in myself in the good shape. I enjoyed it. I really did. It was almost my personality, and at that time, it was just kind of fun. I'm young. I'm able to do this type of stuff, so. I'm just gonna do it for the fun, I guess.
Yeah, man, I think that's important. I think we should do things that we have fun doing always. If you're not having fun, you shouldn't do it. So, but dude, thank you for coming on. I know this is your second time coming on the podcast. Really proud of you for knocking out the half Ironman. We can tell everyone you are an Ironman, okay? That's what you are. We know that for sure. But you're the man, and we'll have you on again. Maybe we'll have you on after the next one and see how you do.
Instead of a hat, you just say Iron Man 70.3. That's what you
Oh,
say
okay, there
instead
we
of a
go.
hat.
Ironman 70.3.